money. Quickly to Wall. Wall measures. Beal gets open for three. Dagger! They don't have any time.
Here comes Pierce with 5 seconds left. Pierce with three. Pierce with two. Pierce all the way at the horn. It's gone!
Morris, Wall, Beal, and Gortat. Porter can't find anybody. Gives it to Wall. Working against Bradley for three.
Welcome to Locked On Wizards Show here on Dash Radio's Nothing But Net station. I'm your host, Noah Getzel. I also host Locked On Wizards podcast, which you can find every day, 5 days a week. This is the Locked On Wizards episode, whatever you want to call it, here on Dash Radio's Nothing But Net station. And we are here every Monday, Tuesday, and Friday at 9 p.m. Not to mention, the podcast is part of the Locked On Podcast Network, which gives you the biggest stories from local experts each and every day. Today we are talking about the Wizards evening up the series 106-98 against the Toronto Raptors, heading back into Canada, Game 5 coming on Wednesday. So it was a huge game for the Wizards as they were able to rally from a slow start. They were down 11 points at halftime, scored 40 in the third quarter, finished with 66 points in the second half. And then Bradley Beal fouled out, and it was interesting, the officiating here tonight. DeRozan had 18 free throw attempts. Marcin Gortat said he's never seen so many soft calls in a playoff game. And finally, we're going to just talk about the resolve of the Wizards to rally back, even without their all-star, and make the defensive stops necessary to win this game. So, to break down all this stuff, we welcome in our guest for the night, Brendan Smith, who is the founder of DMV Sports Network. He's actually a Wizards Extra alum back in the day. You can definitely check out Wizards Extra on Twitter to see all the tweets in the game and post-game videos from players and coaches recapping the game. So, Brendan, what is your reaction to this game? Did you feel like the Wizards had it in hand in the second half, or was it a bit too shaky? Because after they tied the score in the third quarter, it was 80 apiece heading into the fourth. Early on, the Raptors made an 8-0 run, and then, of course, there was that sixth foul call on Bradley Beal with 5 minutes to play. What do you think changed in the final 5 minutes that allowed the Wizards not to lose any steam and, you know, still mount this comeback to come away victorious?
Well, to answer the first part, I mean, as soon as they came out and started the fourth quarter with that 6-0 run or whatever the heck it was, and I was in our group chat for DMVSN, I was telling the guys, like, man, Kyle Lowry's about to come out and poop on us this quarter. And sure enough, he comes out and hits the three or whatever, gets the layup, and, you know, we're looking at, I think it was 86-80, and I'm like, oh, man, well, that's it. I didn't think that they were going to come back from that. And then, you know, they kept it in it, and then Bradley Beal got fouled out, and I was like, okay, well, no, they're definitely not going to win it. I mean, who are they going to give the ball to, especially when you run such a stagnant offense? And to answer the second part, I mean, again, just Kelly Oubre's energy and just his effort has been tremendous for these past two home games. And if he could just keep that up for the rest of the series, I really like the Wizards' chances of going into Game 5 and winning that game. But then you also just have John Wall, who is undoubtedly the best player in this series, in my opinion. And, you know, sometimes in playoff games, all you need is just the extra talent down the stretch, and we saw what Wall could do in this game tonight.
Yeah, in that fourth quarter, after the Raptors went up by 8 points in the first couple of minutes, the Wizards actually rallied 24-8 in the final 7:44. So that's saying something for sure. Another huge performance from John Wall. He had 27 points, 14 assists, 6 rebounds, and 3 steals. Beal, who fouled out in 31 minutes, he had 31 points and 5 rebounds, 2 assists. A couple other guys had some solid contributions, 12 points each from Gortat and Otto Porter, and then Kelly Oubre played awesome defense off the bench, 10 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 steals. So what do you think changed between Game 2, when DeRozan had 37 points versus this game where he had 35 points, most of those coming from the free throw line. Well, 14 of 18 from the free throw line. Do you think the difference in terms of, like, that blowout game where the Wizards lost by 11 versus, you know, this 8-point victory tonight is mainly just Bradley Beal's presence because he scored, I think, just 9 points or, yeah, 9 points in that game two loss?
Well, I think first and foremost, the difference that we've seen between game two and games three and four with DeRozan specifically is just like his, I guess, his desire to shoot the three as his first option. Because, you know, if you watch game two, I mean, he was just pulling without hesitation. Like, he was looking like Klay Thompson out there in that game. And I, even though he hit some tough threes, and he did hit one and one three tonight, I think. And there probably should have been two more. I think he made like that, and there probably should have been fouls, but they weren't called. But, I mean, just the biggest difference, I mean, everyone was hitting in game two, everyone. And I think when you switch and you come and, you know, you switch the place of play, and obviously the home team's role players are going to play a lot better, I think. And that's what we've seen, obviously, with guys like Oubre. So I think that's the biggest part of it. But DeRozan's still good. I mean, it still seemed like to me that he had – it seems to me like every game he has 50 points. And yeah. I tweeted that out earlier in the game. But it's like every point that he scores is just so inconvenient, and it's either just a contested jumper or something. It's just – it's really untimely. And DeRozan is that type of player. He's an extremely skilled player. And I also think – and you just pointed that out – is that, you know, Scott Brooks is deciding to run more plays specifically for Bradley Beal. And I thought it was a disgrace that, you know, at the beginning of game one and two, he'll run like a set or two for Otto or Brad, and then the rest of the game, like, he just expects Wall to just make everything up out of nowhere, and you can't do that. So I was impressed, especially in this game. He tried getting Otto going early in the third quarter. And obviously, if you get looks for Beal, he's going to take care of that as the game goes on. And Beal, again, just did that tonight.
So tell me, what do you think changed in the third quarter? Was it just like the defensive tone that John Wall set for the game? Because, you know, the Wizards scored 40 points in that quarter after scoring just 40 in the entire first half. Beal went off for 12 points. He hit 3 3-pointers. Porter scored 10 points. He also had a pair of 3-pointers. Was it mainly just, you know, pushing in transition that got the Wizards so many easy buckets? What do you think was you know, like the biggest difference in the first half versus third quarter for you, Brendan?
Yeah, I think the Wizards did a good job of picking up the pace in the second half. I think in the first half, when they got a lot of those foul calls, and DeRozan's sitting there, and he's going to the line, it seems like every other possession, and the Raptors are playing the game at the pace that they want to play. And I think in the second half, they lightened up a little bit, especially on those calls for DeRozan, and that allowed Wall and Co. to get out and transition and run the break, and they executed very well in terms of that in the second half.
Mm-hmm. The Wizards were out-rebounded. I forgot the exact numbers in the first half. But in the second, in the third quarter, the entire Raptors team had 2 rebounds versus 10 for the Wizards. Wizards also got 4 blocks in that quarter, including a couple from Mike Scott. So, you know, those defensive takeaways obviously add up. What do you think was going on with the free throws? Like, it seemed like the Wizards were basically doing everything they could do to try and, like, keep it a close game and not close out. They ended up, neither team shot well from the line, but the Wizards were 21 of 31, and then the Raptors were 23 of 30, so obviously some poor free throw percentages there. At least the Raptors hit 76%, or 77%. What, do you feel like it was, like, a issue of being too tired or just lacking poise? There were just way too many missed free throws.
I think the fact that we've seen this too much and too often, I think it's more of poise than anything. And yeah, you can point to a lot of guys that are tired, but Wall was, like, before this game, shooting what, like, something around 90% from the free throw line in this series. So I wouldn't blame it too much on energy. I think it's just poise and staying focused. But obviously, you know, Otto missed a big one there at the end, and Kelly Oubre was able to finish him off, and I think Wall maybe hit some free throws down the line there, but I'm glad they could finish it out, but they certainly missed some key ones throughout the game that could have made it, or could have made the margin a bit thinner throughout the course of the game.
Otto Porter said after the game that, you know, now all the pressure is on Toronto because they're the number one seed, their series is tied, you know, they're expected to win. The Wizards had no expectations going into a series, I guess, even though I don't consider them a typical 8. So what do you think the expectation was to get to the Eastern Conference Finals?
I don't think that there was... of expectation for, like, the Wizards in terms of, like, getting to a certain point. But the thing I knew is that they were capable of beating this team. So mm-hmm. I would still be disappointed if they lost, but I had no expectation, like, oh, if we don't get here, then, you know, it's going to be bad. I look at it as the game-to-game basis and as an overall, just if you look at the opponent, and I still think that the Wizards are more talented than the Toronto Raptors. Just like last year, I thought that the Wizards were more talented than the Boston Celtics, though. Mm-hmm. I did pick the Celtics to win that series, and I did pick the Raptors to win this one, but that's just more due to the fact that the Wizards don't really show out sometimes late in games, and I thought that would be one thing that would stick out in this series. And we all know the defensive troubles and the chemistry issues that have maybe not gone on so well, and we've seen some of those problems still in some of these games, but even though the last two games they were able to pull it out, so there's still an expectation that I want them to beat the Raptors and go on to the next round, but like I didn't want to get my hopes up and pin a certain place on where I wanted them to go in order for me to be happy. I mean, let's face it, it wasn't the best regular season in the world.
Right. Yeah, no doubt about it. Who, like, coming into the rest of the series, do you feel, I guess you weren't at this game, you were at game four, but do you feel like there was a different sort of energy in the arena? To me, it seemed like it was a lot louder. Fans were involved throughout the game. It seemed like there was a better presence in terms of just the number of seats full at tip-off. Of course, like, the Raptors have an incredible fan base. Do you feel like, you know, in the playoffs, home court makes a big difference? Or coming, like, the Wizards were pretty inconsistent at home this year. They had a lot of bad losses, but they've now won 8 straight on their home court in the playoffs. What kind of advantage do you feel like that presents, or is it something that's, you know, not quite as important as people make it out to be?
I think it is important, and for the fact you just said, we've won 8 straight at home, and the fans do a lot, and it's a lot less pressure. You know, you make mistakes, and fans will still encourage you, and if the refs make a bad call, they're completely on your side, so... Mm-hmm. It is certainly important to know that however many thousand people have your back when you're out there. And I know that maybe, you know, DMV sports maybe sometimes doesn't have the strongest of fan bases, especially in terms of cheering, but the energy in these last two games has been incredible. And hopefully we can just get it done in game 5, come back in game 6, have the same energy, and that'll be the end of that.
No doubt. We are going to talk about the officiating and, you know, whether you saw any discrepancies, whether there were any calls, maybe touch calls that you disagreed with, especially after the near fights that broke out after last game. So we're about to focus on that topic in just a quick second. We are here with Brendan Smith, who you can follow on Twitter at @THREEZUSTRIST. That's Threezus Trist, is that right? And you should also follow his newly founded blog, DMV Sports Network. You can go there at dmvsportsnetwork.com or follow them on Twitter at @DMV_SN. So, 12 free throw attempts for DeMar DeRozan in the first quarter. The Raptors came out with a 30-22 advantage there. DeRozan ended up with 18 free throw attempts. Both teams shot about 30 free throws, ended up being, you know, like 60 total for the game. Do you feel like the refs had to keep things in check given what happened in game 3? With, I forgot exactly how many technicals there were, but there was a lot more chippiness than there was tonight. Do you feel like it was on the refs to kind of call the game a little bit differently, or was it just another physical battle where they called foul when there was a foul and blew the whistle in those instances?
I do understand why they wanted to keep it tight in terms of calls. And like I was saying, even, and I think it was the first quarter when Valanciunas hit whoever it was for that flagrant one foul, I don't remember who that was exactly, but it was Wall, I think, right?
Yeah,
it was Wall.
Yeah, right after Wall dunked on him.
Yeah. So I personally did not think that was worth the flagrant one call. I did, but I understand wanting to keep it, like, call it like that, so you can kind of keep the players in check throughout the course of the game. And obviously, DeRozan got lightly touched a lot. Yeah. And like you said, he went to the free throw line at an extreme amount. And my thing is with some of these calls is, like, if people say, oh, well, John Wall doesn't get fouls, he just kind of throws himself at the rim. I would agree with you to some extent. I would agree that that is true. But my problem with it is, if you're going to give a guy one call in the end, then I expect it for my players on the other end. It's not something that's fair. So And it's the same thing I had the problem with Isaiah Thomas last year in the Celtics series. Is he got all these touch calls with that Wall is aggressively attacking the basket the whole game, and they give him nothing. So I do agree that, you know, sometimes that when Wall drives and he just expects there to be a call, that it's not really a good shot attempt and he doesn't do the best job of drawing contact, sure. But if you're going to give one player calls on one end, then it needs to go both ways. And that's something that did not happen really until the second half.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like there was a couple plays where it seemed like DeRozan did absolutely nothing worthy of a foul call, but he still got it. And maybe I'm being biased here, but there was one where he kind of like made a few pivots and then he was looking to pass the ball, jumped up looking to pass, couldn't find anyone, just threw it up, and there was like no defender near him. I can't remember if it was Oubre or Beal. I think it was Beal, but they called a whistle there, and then everybody was going absolutely nuts on that last call for Beal that got him, you know, fouled out with 4 minutes and 58 seconds to go, because again, he was just straight up, so it didn't look like there was contact. But I feel like the refs in the NBA, they rightfully protect shooters, and anytime you get tapped, even in the slightest, if you're a shooter, it makes sense that they you know, give them those calls. But Wall and Beal Wall and DeRozan are more attackers and don't really get fouled on their jump shots quite as often. So I think it makes some sense for the refs to swallow the whistle, because you can't call a foul every time this person drives into a paint, even if there is some contact. Gortat made a pretty strong statement after the game. He said he's never seen so many soft calls before in a playoff game. Do you think that, you know, DeRozan was deserving of 18 free throws, or was it a little bit too much coddling by the refs in terms of, you know, giving him the benefit of the doubt on plays where it seems like the Wizards just had their hands straight up?
Well, I don't think that, like, a lot of times, like, the whole hand straight up thing, I think a lot of times fans get misconstrued. So, like, if you have your hands up, but then you slightly put them down and it affects the player's shot, even though the hands are still up, it is still a foul. And I think a lot of people have a hard time understanding that. But I do think that there were a lot of fouls that didn't need to be called. There was one where he kind of, like, he faded away against Mike Scott, and he ran into Mike Scott, and Mike Scott just stood his ground, and they still called it. And I was like, what? And going back to, like, the Wizards with the foul calls, there was one play where Ty Lawson jumped and he got someone in the air. And this was, like, right under the basket. I don't know if you remember that one or not. And, like, he jumped into him a little bit. And I wouldn't have called that necessarily, like, a foul either. But, again, the thing is it has to be both ways. And, like, DeRozan gets lightly touched and it's a foul. So why can't Ty Lawson get the foul call? If he does a good job of pump faking, the defender jumps and he goes into him to get contact. I didn't see how that couldn't be called. And then Markieff Morris on an alley-oop at the end. That was a foul, and they didn't call it. I mean, there was a lot of stuff down the end that they didn't call. DeRozan had an offensive foul on Wall. They didn't call that. It was very frustrating. Mm-hmm. If you go back and look at my tweets, I was very livid.
Definitely go back and follow Threes's Trice. See all of his, you know, emotional tweets throughout the game. And
thank you.
Yeah, I think it was a lot. I don't have the numbers in front of me for how many free throws the team shot in the other two games, but definitely a little bit tighter. And, you know, the refs are doing the best they can, but of course there's always going to be inconsistency. Even, you know, I noticed late in the game there was at least one play where DeRozan clearly got fouled driving into the rim, and the refs might have just figured, okay, we've given this guy X number, like how many teens of free throws, like we've got to let this one slide for once. But yeah, definitely a gutsy victory for the Wizards, and we're going to talk about the defensive effort that the Wizards are showing, because, you know, they held the Raptors under 100 points this game. They had allowed the Raptors to, I think it was like 122 or something points per contest in the first two matches. They scored like 114 and then 130. So we'll be talking about what's changed defensively in just a second here on Locked On Wizards on Dash Radio's Nothing But Net station. So, Brendan, the defense has really stepped up for the Wizards. In the first three games, the Raptors hit 16 three-pointers, 13 three-pointers, and then 12 in Game 3 as the Wizards won that one. They hit just 7 tonight, even though they shot decently, 7 of 18, which is 39%. The Wizards seem to, you know, chase shooters off the line a little bit more. What do you think? Is it kind of just knowing, like, we can't get beat from beyond the three-point line? What do you think has changed in terms of the defensive adjustments that the Wizards have made? And it seems like a lot of the small ball centers aren't quite as active for the Raptors in terms of Serge Ibaka having more quiet games. He had just 7 points tonight. Valanciunas and Jakob Poeltl didn't have too much of an impact offensively either. What do you think has kind of turned the tables a little bit for the Wizards defensive end?
Well, I don't know how many Wizards fans are going to be happy to hear this one, but I actually think that the big reason for the Raptors' drop-off in shooting is because, well, number one, they're just missing shots, and number two, some of their guys are shying away from shots. And the Wizards have made some adjustments, yes. Like, for example, in Game 1, they thought that they could just trap DeRozan and Lowry and everything would be okay. Well, in Game 2, everyone touched the ball and they made a million three-pointers. So, in Game 3, I mean, they still came out hot. But the biggest thing, especially tonight, like, guys are just missing. Like, in C.J. Miles in Game 3, like, he still hit some good shots, but, like, he missed those ones that he was hitting at home, and he missed some good ones tonight.
Yeah.
So I think that the Wizards, again, have made good adjustments, and I think they're realizing that they need to close out on shooters more. Yeah, that's fine, but, I mean, DeLon Wright was passing up a lot of open looks tonight that he probably wouldn't have shied away from at home, and it's just stuff like that. But, again, when the Wizards dictate the pace and they get out in transition and they make it known that you're going to pay if you miss shots, then it makes guys hesitate a little bit. So it also is a little bit because of the way the Wizards dictate the game offensively too. So it all connects to me. Again, I think it's just about more of guys just shying away from shots and just missing some of those open jumpers that they made at home, as opposed to the Wizards making some big defensive adjustment.
So you feel like some of the shooters might be shying away from threes perhaps versus, you know, trying to take it inside where you might potentially be fouled and give your defense a chance to set up, just because if you miss a three, it might be a long rebound where John Wall can chase it down and just start a fast break from the get-go. Do you feel like that would impact a shooter's mind if, you know, the opposing team is just running out in transition and getting easy buckets every play?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I would be hesitant to shoot a three knowing that John Wall's going to go down the court and find Beal, Kelly Oubre, Otto Porter for an open three. I would be hesitant because a lot of the shots that the Raptors take, too, they are contested three-pointers. Like, they are contested. So it's not necessarily like a high percentage shot per se, but they still can. But again, when you're on the road and the Wizards are having their way now, they're setting the pace, it's a bit different. You have to think about those shots a little bit more.
The only guys to score above 11 points for the Raptors tonight were DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry. Do you feel like the bench, I think they had like 22 bench points. Do you feel like some of the role players have dropped off, at least on the offensive end for the Raptors? And, you know, of course the Wizards can do everything they can to shut down the stars, but like what's kind of been the difference? Do you think it's just a home crowd that motivates some of your role player type guys to have bigger performances and maybe, you know, not have that same spark when they're on the road? Or do you feel like it's something schematically that's changing for, you know, the lesser known Raptors not having the same type of impact?
Yeah, I think, and like I said earlier, the role players play better at home. But I said this before the series started. I said it after Game 1, and I said it after Game 2. The Raptors bench does not impress me a whole lot. Like, it scares everyone in sports media and NBA media. I'm sorry. It does not concern me. If you're telling me that I'm supposed to be scared of Jakob Poeltl, Pascal Siakam, and Lorenzo Brown, I'm not going to be scared of that. I'm sorry. No matter how you look at it, I am not terrified of that. Do those guys contribute? Yes. Are they talented players? Yeah, they are. But it's not anything that's going to make me jump out of my seat and go, oh my God, I need to be concerned about that. We saw that tonight. Like you said, the bench points in. I think the Wizards also outscored the Raptors bench in another game. So again, it's just not too concerning to me. And sure, they definitely played a huge role in games 1 and 2. But again, when you're at home, your role players are going to play better. And we've seen that with Washington. So it goes both ways. But again, and I'll say it again, I am not scared of them.
Yeah. And in the past two Wizards victories, Wall and Beal combined for 56 points in Game 3 and then 58 points here in Game 4. Do you feel like the Wizards are over-relying on them because, you know, there aren't a ton of other guys who are contributing? Or do you think that's kind of the way that it's got to be, that, you know, they're the All-Stars, they've got to, you know, have their impact offensively? Do you think it's sustainable for them each to be scoring about 30 points a game?
It better. I mean, we got, however many million dollars betting on three of these guys. So, I mean, that's what we're paying him the big bucks for. I mean, Wall's going to be making, what, over $40 million soon? So,
yeah.
I mean, that's what you pay him for. And again, I don't understand, like, and I understand the need to have, like, a serviceable backup. But for guys to say that the Wizards need to go out there and get some of these, like, marquee backups, like everyone wanted Patty Mills and stuff. And I get that he can play with Wall, too. But you don't need to go and spend a whole bunch of money that you really don't have in all these backups that are only going to be playing however many minutes in the postseason. This is what it comes down to. And you still have guys like Zadaransky, who I feel like Scott Brooks is still really underused in this series. Right. And it's been quite disappointing because he had such a good regular season and he deserved some more minutes in the postseason that he's gotten, especially from a defensive aspect. And he just hasn't gotten it. But again, I mean, we're paying these guys these big bucks, and we saw with Wall tonight, he played, I think, what, 43 minutes, and he still came out and did what he did to close out the game, and that's what you need him to do, and obviously, Brad hit some big shots throughout the game.
What did you think of the three-point guard lineup that was deployed? I can't quite remember if it was in the second quarter or some other point, but there was Wall running point, and then Lawson at shooting guard, and Tomas Satoransky at the three spot. I don't know what the over-under was during that span, but do you, like, obviously the Wizards have five point guards on their lineup. What would make the most sense if you were to kind of have multiple point guards in at the same time? Who works best together? Do you like seeing Satoransky and Wall on the floor together? Do you like seeing Wall with Lawson? What do you think is working in terms of, you know, those bench contributions?
I think that, I mean, I like Wall with anyone on the court. Like, let's just be real about that first and foremost. But I do, and I like the three-guard lineup, sure. I think that it gives you a lot of versatility and a lot of IQ. But I specifically like Wall and Lawson because I think that we've seen already in the series that Lawson's going to hit three-pointers, and that's something that you need if you put alongside Wall. So, for example, if you want to go out there and put Tim Frazier out there beside John Wall, that's maybe not going to work out too well. But if you put Satoransky, you can hit the three, or Lawson, you can obviously hit the three. And then Lawson also does a good job of getting into the paint and finding teammates. I think that's kind of a dynamic duo there on the offensive end for the Wizards. It may not work out too well, especially on the defensive end, but I think in terms of offense and getting out in transition and getting easy buckets, I think that's a perfect duo.
Stepping back and looking big picture, like, what do you think was most impressive about this victory, you know, being down 11 points, playing without their all-star for the final minutes, 5 minutes? What impressed you most in the Wizards' ability to tie the series up tonight?
They didn't quit. And it's been really tough watching this team this year because they have quit against so many opponents, on so many easy opponents, so many inconvenient times. And the fact that they were able to do it on one of the biggest stages in basketball in front of your home crowd, knowing it is a must-win game because you don't want to go back to Toronto down 3-1. I mean, the series is just over at that point. It just is. I mean, the Wizards aren't going to win three straight games against the Raptors. That's not happening. But to show your real character and to go against adversity down the stretch, knowing you're without one of your other star players, I think it speaks a lot to Kelly Oubre's character, and especially a lot to John Wall's character, who has gotten a fair amount of criticism over the course of this season. And to see him having such a great postseason so far is really encouraging.
Absolutely. Well, I think we should end it right there. It's good to see that the Wizards, you know, they played determined, they played aggressive, they didn't let anything faze them, whether it was a deficit or the calls going against them, or losing, you know, their top player who scored 30 points in the game. So, Brendan, I really appreciate it. Do you have anything else that you want to plug before we sign off?
No, I hope that they can go out there and have the same mentality in Game 5 and just hope that the Raptors don't come out blazing from three-point, but right. I guess we'll see. But I'm hoping for Game 5. If we get Game 5, I think we come home and take care of it in Game 6.
I would agree, yeah. So, big victory, big pair of victories here over the weekend at Capital One Arena. Especially a great showing tonight. You know, it seemed very loud the way it should be. A lot of Wizards games feel like road games with about, you know, a third or half the fans coming from representing the other team. Luckily, Canada's pretty far away, so it would be some dedicated fans to, you know, travel in big numbers that far. Brendan, I appreciate it. That's all the time we have here on Locked On Wizards on tonight's edition of, well, it'll actually be Monday night's edition of Dash Radio's Nothing But Net station. Thanks so much for your time, and go Wizards. Let's see what happens on Wednesday.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you for having me. This is how we do it.
the west side. So I reach for my 40 and I tell